Morning.
Good morning.
In 1978, a book came out that was very famous, still popular today. The author died in 2005. And the book starts out with three words in the very beginning. Life is difficult. Some of you may know that what book I'm talking about right now. Any guesses to that book? His name was Scott Peck. And the name of the book was The Road Less Traveled. If I were to put a subtitle to the Book of Ruth, it would be The Road Less Traveled. Another subtitle I thought maybe would be Wonder Woman Extraordinaire, because she truly was. There's four chapters in the Book of Ruth. I'm going to try and get to the first two today and then wrap it up next Friday. We'll just get as far as we can and see how that goes. It's an unusual book because many times the Lord works in strange ways and there's ironic endings and those kind of things. We've got all that going on in the Book of Ruth. It's a love story, a story of redemption, story of God's will, God's discipline, God's grace, prayer or the lack of prayer, guidance, what road we're on, the choices and the consequences of the choices we make. So there's a lot going on. I'm an old hippie from the 60s and 70s. And there's a song from the 60s and 70s. By a theological group called Led Zeppelin. And that song was Stairway to Heaven. And there's a lyric in that song that goes along kind of like what the Ruth. It says, there's two paths you can go by, but in the long run, there's still time to change the road you're on. So this book is a kind of an opportunity to think about the road we're on. I'm going to read just a sort of a chunk at a time and then a little commentary on that. So I'm going to start with Ruth chapter 1, verses 1 through 5, and it goes like this. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech. And his wife's name, Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephraimites from Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And as she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women. One named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left with her two sons, left without her two sons and husband. So it starts out by making a comment about the general climate, what's going on in Israel at this time. It says, in the days of when the judges ruled. When I told my buddy Gene Emmons that I was going to be teaching on the Book of Ruth, I asked him if he read it very often. He said, I'm mainly in the New Testament. And I'm mainly in the New Testament, too. But there's some interesting stories, obviously, in the Old Testament. And this one is interesting. I like Ruth and I like Esther both. I've taught them in the jail on multiple occasions. And when the judges rule, when you think of judges and maybe right choices and so forth, that's not what was going on. The time of judges was a period where the Jewish nation rebelled, was disciplined, came back to the Lord, went back and forth and back and forth. The judges, multiple times throughout the Book of Judges, says, and there was no king in the land. And also, multiple times, it will say, everyone did what seemed right in their own lives. I think there might be some parallels.
The
to the USA Today, perhaps. It said there was a famine in the land. Well, what does that mean? A famine is typically bad crops, livestock problems, not enough food to go around. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that it was like the Dust Bowl of the 30s, where it was just wiped out for decades and no crops could be produced. But there was a famine in the land, times were tough, and this family decided to leave Bethlehem and travel to Moab. That's about a 50-mile trip. You go from the west side of the Dead Sea to the other, to the east side into Moab. Now Moab, the Moabites were despised by the Jews. They got in trouble. They had working relationships at times, but not very often. Moab had a very checkered past, to say the least. Moab was named after a guy named Moab. And Moab was the result of an incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughters. When Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed, Lot and his daughters left, and the two daughters wanted to keep the family line going, so they got their father drunk and had sex with him, and the oldest daughter had a son named Moab. And out of that came the Moabite people. Not a very great start for a people group or a tribe. There were consequences. We're going to talk a little bit in a few minutes about prayer and guidance and those kind of things, and perhaps lack thereof concerning Amalek and Naomi and the family in this big move. I'm going to go on to read 6-9 now. So, when she heard, I'll go back to spy for just a second. And Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When she heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to your dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them and they wept aloud. So Naomi, although her faith was probably pretty weak, she still had faith. And she knew that she needed to go back to Bethlehem, where the rest of her family was, where she started out. So she decides to make this trip back. And if you think about it for a minute, they lived there in Moab for at least 10 years. So they must have had a home, maybe some property, maybe they farmed, maybe they had livestock, maybe they had a trade, a skill, a business. We don't know exactly what they did, how they existed in Moab, but they apparently seemed to do okay if they could make it there for 10 years. Well, she's ready to leave and go back. And she tells her two daughters-in-law, "You may as well stay, because going back to Bethlehem is not going to be a great setup for you. Go back to your own families, find husbands here in your own land, your own culture, and move on into life." So, again, in starting at the end of verse 9, "Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud, and said to her, 'We'll go back with you to you and your people.' But Naomi said in verse 11, 'Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands?'" As we know, in Old Testament culture, carry on the family line. For instance, if your brother's wife died, that was customary. If you weren't married, to take his wife and keep the family line and the family name going. So she says, am I going to have more sons than you could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. And even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it's more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has gone out against me. At this, they wept again. Then Orpha kissed her mother goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. So we see the two daughters. At first, both of them say, we're going to go with you. And then again, at their mother-in-law's urging, one daughter decides to go back, but Ruth decides to go with her. Ruth, well, we're going to read a few more verses here. At this they wept again, verse 14, then Orpha kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Verse 15, look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and to her gods. Go back with her. Here's some key verses right here, starting in 16. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or go back from where you, for where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. So, determined is an understatement in the life of Ruth. Scott Peck, in his book, makes a statement, and a lot of his quotes are online and so forth, but one of them goes like this. Love is as love does. You know, one daughter loved her mother-in-law, but the other one was truly committed to her mother-in-law. These verses right here, starting in verse 16 through 18, are sometimes used in wedding ceremonies where the spouses or the bride and groom will repeat these verses. Where you die, I will die. And I'll be buried with you. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely. If anything but death separates you and me. That's a pretty strong commitment. And we could go back to using those verses more often in wedding ceremonies, I think. So they left. And to think about this now, you've got these two women leaving Moab to walk back to Bethlehem, 50 miles, which is going to be a minimum of 3 or 4 days of walking. And Ruth and Naomi left everything. In other words, whatever Elimelech and Naomi and the family had accumulated while they were living 10 years in Moab, I mean, at best, these two women had maybe a burrow to carry all of the possessions that they had in the whole world. Whatever, if they had a home, if they built a home, if they had a business, if they had a property, they left everything to go back empty-handed to Bethlehem. And even in the case of, at least with Naomi had some idea of what life was going to be like in Bethlehem. That's where she was from. That's where she grew up. Ruth, on the other hand, was a Moabite. She had no idea, really, what to expect by going back to Bethlehem. She did obviously know that the nation of Israel and Moab were not on great terms together. So she was going to be the outcast, the pagan Gentile outcast in Bethlehem. So, starting in verse 19, we'll take off again. It says, so the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, can this be Naomi? Don't call me Naomi, she told him. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Lord Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth, the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was about to begin. So, Naomi is sort of connecting dots a little bit. She sees this series of poor choices that she and her husband have made as the consequences, as part of their lack of planning and the lack of being in the middle of God's will, so to speak. They come back to Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. So you've got Naomi, which is kind of Mrs. Debbie Downer, really. Everything is black, and she knows she's made a bunch of mistakes. She wants her name changed. Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, which means bitter, which means the Lord's hand has come out against me. So we're gonna jump into chapter 2 right now, the beginning of chapter 2. 2:1-3. Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean in the fields of the harvester. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. So Boaz was often referred to as a kinsman redeemer. And you've got the contrast between these two women again. Naomi is moaning and groaning about how difficult everything is, and the Lord's hand against me, and I don't know what to do. And Ruth says, I gotta get a job. I gotta get to work. And she heads out to do whatever she can do. She's not waiting for her. There's no social safety net this time for widows and orphans and so forth, especially widows. So Ruth starts out and just by chance ends up in Boaz's field. Kind of a coincidence, but really divine providence. So starting in verse 4. Just then Boaz from Bethlehem arrived and greeted the harvester. "The Lord be with you," he said. "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of the harvesters, "Who's that woman? Who is that young woman?" The foreman replied, "She is a Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning until now, except for a short rest in the shelter." End of verse 7. So for some reason, Ruth sort of stands out. There's a lot of girls, women that were gleaning the field. It was customary back then, as many of us know, that if you were a landowner and you were harvesting crops, you were to leave some along the edges for the poor people to gather so that they didn't starve to death. It was a safety net again for those that were down and out. Ruth, if we will find out more and more as we go through the rest of the book, but her approach to life is, "I'm just going to do the next right thing. I don't know where it's all going to go, but I'm just going to do the next right thing." So starting in verse 8, So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls." Verse 9, "Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and drink from the water jars the men have filled." Now, some curious things here. "I told the men not to touch you." Apparently, the working men of the field would take advantage of the women or the young girls that were poor and gleaning the field. And Boaz has made it clear, don't lay a hand on Ruth. So there's something, there's a connection that's starting between these two. Now, if you think about Bethlehem, it's a small town back then, and word travels fast. There's probably a lot of gossip. Probably everybody in town knows that Ruth and Naomi came back, her husband's dead, her two sons died. And Boaz also knows some of the story of what's going on with Ruth and Naomi. So verse 10. "At this she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, 'Why have I found favor in your eyes that you notice me a foreigner?' Boaz replied, 'I have been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of her husband. How you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have taken refuge.'" Ruth has previously said, "Your God will be my God." You know, the book of Ruth is still read today in Jewish synagogues when they celebrate the Shabbat. They read this book aloud. The Jewish nation, Israel, believed that Ruth had accepted the God of the Old Testament, the same God that the Jews worship. And ironically, that's also the same God that we worship. We just divide that, this, who's the real Messiah. But Boaz says, "May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, who's under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Like I said, Ruth is just a person that wants to do the next right thing. She apparently gets noticed by Boaz. Something's different about her. She has a different work ethic. She shows up early, she stays late, and she works all day long. We don't get a lot of description about, was she very attractive? Like in the book of Esther, Esther became the queen. She was a beautiful girl, woman, and she became the queen. But all we know for sure about Ruth is that she was determined, she worked hard, and she was probably fairly good looking. Who knows? We don't know for sure. But Boaz was more of a middle-aged sort of guy. He may have been a widower. Again, we don't know, but we know that he had land and property and beautiful work for him. And Ruth was probably a lot younger than him. Okay, starting along in verse 13. "Now continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, 'Come over here, have some bread, dip it in the wine vinegar.'" I'm starting to get a little more acquainted. Verse 14 again. "When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to the men. 'Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her.'" Show special attention to this woman. She's a little different. All right, verse 17. "So Ruth gleaned the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley and had gathered it and gathered an amount about a ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz." "The Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing kindness to the living and the dead," she said. "That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." verse 21. Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finished harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." In other words, this was not a safe and secure job. They didn't have an HR department. So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz and gleaned until the barley and wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So what is the message for us today? When we make major decisions, we typically pray about them. So did Naomi and Elimelech pray about this major decision to move from Bethlehem to Moab? What do you think? They may have had a superficial prayer, but they weren't really seeking to be in the middle of God's will. To leave Bethlehem and to go to Moab would be the equivalent of the Amish in Lancaster, Pennsylvania family taking off and going to Atlantic City because there's good jobs in the casinos. It's not a wise choice. And so for Elimelech and Naomi to leave and take their two sons, we don't know exactly why all three died either. We do know that in the Old Testament times especially, blessings and consequences for poor choices were a lot more obvious. The Lord works through things like that, much more so than today, I think. We're in the age of, we're New Testament believers under Jesus. There's still consequences for poor choices, but the consequences were very obvious back in those days. I want to read something from a commentary. This is from Reformed Expository Commentary, Ian Bedard. And this is what he says about these first chapter or so. "In life, there are certain defining moments, key crossroads along the way. On one hand, there are certain times when a person consciously chooses his or her destination. There are occasions like that when Scott Peck recalls when he had to make a choice between going down two different paths, thinking one or the other. What he recalled was that he took the road less traveled. The remainder of his life was, as Peck determined, the result of having chosen to take the road less traveled. On the other hand, though, there are times in life when it seems your destination has been chosen for you. These are the occasions when life gives us no choice at all, but thrust upon us willy-nilly down a path that, however well-traveled or little-traveled, we would never have chosen for ourselves. No one chooses to have her husband die, leaving her a widow with young children. No one chooses to have a crippling accident, a life-threatening disease with permanent consequences. These two can be defining moments in life. But all of us, whether defined by the choices we have made or the choices life has made for us, are on a journey through life, a road that is heading towards some destination. Where are you going? The first chapter of the book of Ruth is a story of choices made and choices seemingly thrust upon people about roads traveled or left untraveled. It's about the long-term consequences of the decisions we make. Often the consequences are not those we expected and anticipated, but our lives nonetheless bear the mark of the decisions we have made and the defining moments we have faced. The book of Ruth shows us that our actions have consequences. I'd like to read from the Our Daily Bread devotional pretty much every morning now. Back on November 24th, my wife and I were in this campground in Wilson State Park in the middle of Kansas. We're the only people in the whole campground on our way to Kansas City for Thanksgiving. And it's windy. It's just really, really windy. You can't get out of camera. And anyways, this devotional was around Psalm 62 from King David. It's called the Will of God. God's will is sometimes hard to follow. He asks us to do the right things. He calls us to endure hardship without complaining, to love awkward people, to heed the voice inside that says, we must not go there. Instead, to take the steps we'd rather not take. So we must tell our souls all day long, hey, soul, listen up. Be silent. Do what Jesus asked you to do. David determines to live in silent, quiet submission to God's will. This is our calling as well, the thing which we were created for. We'll be at peace when we agree, not my will, but yours be done. This is our first and highest calling.
Amen.
So I'm out of time, guys. We'll wrap this up next week. Again, the Lord works in strange ways, and we'll see how he works out the rest of this day.